This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Finding Your Bliss with host Judy Liebrack, heard every Saturday at 1 p.m. on Zoomer Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Finding Your Bliss, the show that helps you find and follow your bliss. I'm Judy Liebrack, and as you all know, one of my favorite interviews to do is to talk with talented actors in this country, and we're about to meet one of them right now who not only has over 200 credits to her name in the areas of theater, film, TV, and voice work, but she also has become internationally renowned as a trailblazer in this country, in this industry, and she's one of the first to have paved the way for artists of color right here at home. Of course, I'm speaking about acclaimed Canadian actress Kim Roberts. And before we meet her, let me just tell you a little bit more about her. Kim Roberts' most memorable roles include Marnie in my favorite show of all time, Schitt's Creek, and Alice in the Changeling, Christine in The Handmaid's Tale, Maggie in Working Moms, Greta in The Sinner, Neva in The Strain, Maz in The Doodle Bops, Deborah in Saw 3 and Saw 4, Bosco in The Cheetah Girls, and her continuing role as Mayor Goodway in Paw Patrol, Paw Patrol the Movie, and most recently, Paw Patrol the Mighty Movie, which was released last year in 2023. Kim is a pioneer in her industry. She has represented Canada on domestic and international screens for the past really 30 plus years, and she was the first Black woman to speak in a nationally televised Canadian commercial. The spot was for Benylin cough syrup. So cool. And she's one of the co-founders of a theater that I love called the Obsidian Theater, Canada's most prominent Black theater company. You'll all remember Julie Black and Caroline Erchange, who was, of course, on this show. And as well, Kim has been a mentor, and I love this about her too, to emerging actors all throughout her career. Kim has worked alongside the best in the business, from producers and directors like Steven Spielberg, Zack Snyder, Maya Angelou, my fave, Sidney Lumet, and Adam McGuire, to actors and musicians like Drake, Robin Williams, Jackie Chan, Bill Pullman, Mariah Carey, Lindsay Lohan, and even the late beloved Christopher Plummer. Active on the local scene, Kim was the host at Harbor Front's main stage for 12 years. She's hosted the illumination of the Bloor Viaduct, the Pan Am Games, and various other events for the City of Toronto. You can currently watch Kim in The Changeling, streaming now on Apple TV, and in season 7 of Working Moms on Netflix. You are a very, very happening actor, Kim.
What a busy time.
Really exciting. And also, nice fun fact to look out for. You can look out for Kim as Ms. Patty in Alert Missing Persons Unit, airing on the Fox Network, CTV, and Hulu, which just actually aired on April 2nd. So just before this episode is being released, but you can get it on all of these streaming platforms. Kim Roberts, welcome to Find Your Bliss. It's so wonderful to have you here.
Oh, Judy, it's a pleasure to be here with you. Hi.
Hi. I'm so glad that we could do this. First of all, as I just mentioned, I have to say, Kim, you have quite the resume. You've been in so many iconic films and TV shows. You actually do have over 200 credits to your name. And I know you've been acting since the age of 7. When you performed with the Friendship Circle, helmed by Lois Lillenstein of Sharon, Lois, and Bran fame. That's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. We discovered you at school, hired you to become part of the Friendship Circle, and you remained with Lois for many years. What was that like as a little kid at 7 years old? It must have been a very thrilling day when she came into your classroom and really selected you. What do you remember about that day when she came scouting for talent and you got selected?
Well, it was so crazy, right? At 7 years old, you have no concept of the fact that you're going to be doing a show or a job or anything. All I knew is that these two nice ladies came to our class and they were like, let's sing some songs. Let's play some games. And I guess that's how they auditioned at that age, right? So they just kind of threw the whole class in there and ran us through these things. And I don't know what it was, but they chose me. I was one of two out of our year. And I remember going home, my mom telling me that, yeah, those ladies want you to go in and sing with them some more. Did you have fun? Did you like it? I was like, yeah, okay. And it was great. I mean, it was, I don't even know much about the program itself because I was so young. All I knew is that once every week or two, we would gather with kids from, there were kids from like, I think I might've been one of the youngest up till maybe grade 7 or 8. Wow. And yeah. And so we called the Friendship Circle, and then we tour around to all the different schools in the neighborhood, and we did the Mariposa Festival. And we just, for me, it was just, you know, I got to go up there and sing and dance with my friends and have some fun and then engage.
You didn't realize you're becoming part of Canadian history, right? But theatrical history, that's really amazing stuff. And it happened even earlier. You come by it honestly, because your mother talked about how they used to put on plays as children in Dominica to entertain each other. And she encouraged that bone in you at an early age. And I read that throughout your childhood, your cousins and you would perform fully rehearsed plays to theater audiences in the basements of your home. Then, of course, you took drama when it was offered. Mm-hmm. But you did these fully rehearsed plays in the basement of your homes with your cousins.
Theater seating, costume department, wardrobe department, makeup department, the whole nine yards. I remember one year my cousin Nicole made long fingernails, extension fingernails out of crayons. So she melted down her crayons. So then we had fake fingernails for the show. And they kept falling off during the show. It wasn't the best conceived idea. But we had a lot of fun. My cousins Jackie and Jason were always, you know, co-stars in the events. It was a good time.
Oh, great. That's so great for your imagination. But for you, this was like the seeds of something that was going to become your lifelong work. So it's pretty amazing. And you've also said that 20 years ago, it was, or 30 years ago even, it was lonelier for Black actors to be part of the community and to have wonderful roles in new Canadian works. And this, thankfully, it has wonderfully evolved and it's changing and constantly evolving. And I think this was part of the impetus of when you had that first meeting in your home in the Oakwood area after receiving a call from actor-director Allison Seeley Smith saying she wanted to start a Black theater company, including Janet Sears, who I went to theater school with at York University. So I'm reading this and thinking, we're the same vintage. Like, wow. And that theater company, the Obsidian Theater, is responsible for such great works as Carolina Change, which featured the great Miss Julie Black, who's been on the show a number of times, and more. So can you tell us more about that pivotal, transformative meeting in your living room, in your home with all of the actors and what transpired?
Well, I mean, I like to take credit for is having a venue, right? Allison likes my house and we'd hang out a lot. And so I think it was her and Satori Shakur who came up with the idea of getting this started. And Allison enlisted 12 other theater artists. I think Roy Lewis, Olivia Aggie, Philip Aiken, Sandy Ross, Trisha Williams, Arden Bess. I'm trying to think, who am I forgetting? There's still a few more. But there, Yana McIntosh. There were 12 of us. And we started meeting here on a weekly basis to just kind of talk about what we could envision, what we would like to see on the landscape. Because back then, there was no really big Black theater company. I think there might have been Black Theater Canada in Montreal, but there was really only one small theater company at any particular given point that was sustaining itself in Canada. And we wanted something that could be national. We wanted something that would really, really bring the voice to the stage and really enlist all of the talent that was not being utilized in the community. And so, yeah, we had these great dream sessions of what it could be. And eventually we created a mandate, created the bylaws, created, you know, the concepts going forward and put in all the steps that had to be put in. It took a few months. And then Philip Aiken got an actual office space for us and the meetings moved from my home and the company took off, and as it should. I mean, the founders birth a company and then it's supposed to function on its own. And we are just the proud parents who, you know, hopefully show up and enjoy the shows. And I'm so proud of Obsidian, what it's done for the landscape of diverse theater in the country. Yes.
And I love that they partner with Burbage and with Musical Stage Company and with all these other wonderful theater companies. And they're really like serious players on the scene. Want to go back even further. I love the story about how you met Diane Roberts and went to an audition for a play being directed by, and I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly, Audrey Sheena Mandiela. But when you got there, the audition was canceled, but you ended up meeting Audrey's daughter, Jajoub. And while you were chatting with her, Audrey invited you to perform your audition monologue from Lady in Red. And I know this piece for Color Girls Who Have Considered Suicide, When the Rainbow's Enough, because I think Janet was in this at York University. I remember
that she was
very, very well. Like, just I'm getting the chills remembering how wonderful it was. And after you performed your monologue, Adri asked if you could start working in her play right away.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that experience?
It was crazy. I mean, I was, so I had been back and forth at university and I had finally gone back to finish up my political science degree, right? And I'd said theater is something I love, but it's not something I'm going to be doing professionally. And Diane Roberts, who had been in the first year of theater school at York with me, and I think she was also one of the co-founders of Obsidian. Anyway, Diane called and she said, I'm, you know, stage managing the show for the Company of Sirens, which was a feminist theater company helmed by Cynthia Grant, Susan Seagrove, and Catherine Silver Glenn was a woman who was also directing and coordinating the show. And she, along with Audrey Zina Mandiella, who was the director for the show, were holding auditions to fill the role that Joanne Reese was vacating for another show. And so she called. She said, I think you'd be great for this. Why don't you come in and read? I'm like, no, I have, you know, 3 months to finish the degree. I've like been, you know, all around the world with it. So I just need to finish this. And she said, well, why don't you do it just for the experience? You know, it's a good thing. So this was back before cell phones. And I had a funeral that morning. And so they couldn't reach me. They were trying to call me because apparently Catherine Silver Glenn's partner had had an accident. And so the auditions had been canceled, but they couldn't reach me. So Audrey was kind enough to show up to the venue just in case me or anybody else showed up. And she had her daughter Jujube with her. And Jujube was actually on Degrassi, Jujube Mandiella. So people will know her from Degrassi many years later. But yeah, Jujube was 3 at the time. And she's sitting there on the stage at Trinity St. Paul's church basement rehearsal hall. And they're waiting, and I walk in my blue funeral dress, you know, still straight from the church. And I just said, yes, you know, it's been canceled, but since you made the trip, why don't you sit down and talk to me for a minute?
Oh.
I sat down beside her and Jujube just crawled into my lap and started playing with my hair. And like, I've got this thing with kids and dogs. It's just like, they see me, they see their parents, right? Always, I'm good with it. But her, I think for Audrey, she's like, what? She's a little surprised. So we kept talking and she said, well, you know, why don't you do your piece? And it was The Lady in Red from For Color Girls, which had become my signature piece by then. And full circle moment, ironically, the man who directed the inaugural performance of For Color Girls Who Have Considered Suicide When the Rainbow Is Enough by Intozake Shange on Broadway was Oz Scott. And Oz and I later worked together first on Soul Food and then on Cheetah Girls. And he just directed this episode of Alert where I played Miss Patty. He requested me and like when we did this together, and it was so much fun and it was great.
Oh, I love those things.
You know, and I mean, it's that piece that was the piece that made me an actor. It's the piece I would use for auditions for theater schools or for directors, for anything. And it's the one that they kind of paid attention to. So so I did the piece and then Audrey asked me to sing and I sang and she gave me the job right then. And I started touring with the company and never stopped working.
The other person that we have in common, and I got to ask you about this guy, because I did a little bit of digging, and that's Ron Singer at York University. And love that man.
Oh, I love Ron. You're going to make me cry.
And I know that he had a pivotal part of your career. And
Absolutely.
He is probably one of the most wonderful teachers and directors there is.
Absolutely.
And tell us about Ron Singer and what he
was. So as I was telling you, I was the worst student. I mean, I just didn't like going to class in the morning pretty much. So because I'm not a big morning person. But, so I had done a year of political science, majored in poli-sci and minored in philosophy at Western University, Theatre of Western Ontario. University of Western Ontario. And my goal was to become a lawyer and to make my mother happy. And I liked the law. But at the end of the year, I'd really not gone to class a lot in the morning. So I needed to take a course I needed an extra credit. And York University offered a summer theater course that Ron taught. And he did it for himself, like for his soul. He loved teaching theater. And as the chair of the theater department, he really didn't get to do that anymore. So he taught this course every summer and it was open to anybody. And it worked as an English credit. So I took this course and had the most amazing experience. The scenes, I had Michael Longford, who's a beautiful sculptor and teacher, was my scene partner. And we did a scene from A Hat Full of Rain. And it was so brilliant. Like it was just through his coaching and through everything I was learning in that class, we really did something great. And so you have an evaluation at the end of the class. Ron sat me down. He said, you know, I think you could actually do this for a living if you're interested. And I would love to have you at York. And normally people audition to get into York Theater. I think they accept maybe 1,500 students for the first year. That cuts down to 200 for the second year. And he was offering me steady, like a spot in the second year. So it was like, boom, bypassing. And I was like, oh, well, I'm really flattered, but no thanks. I've got a great apartment at Western and a really good schedule. I have no classes before 10. I have no classes on Fridays. Like, yeah. But thanks. But you know, I have to say there are reasons for everything, because that year at Western, I still didn't go to school very much, But I played a lot of backgammon with my with one of my roommates who is now my brother. Both of my, like, I live with three guys, believe it or not. That was a lot of fun. But no, we became a family. They were like brothers to me. And to this day, Phil and Ricky are my brothers. They're
family, you know,
to their children. Their wives are my sisters-in-law. Like, we're family. And if not for going back to Western, I would have never met them, never had that. And I mean, that's been one of the most beautiful relationships to last my lifetime, you know? So I think that's why I had to go back. I went back to Ron at the end of that year and said, you know, okay, I really do need to focus more. Can I come to York now? And he said, no, I'm not in charge anymore. I'm going on sabbatical. And he said, I'll get you a meeting with Jeff Henry, but I can't promise you anything. And yes, so I did meet with Jeff, and Jeff was lovely, but Jeff said, you know, I really don't know you. I can't offer you what Ron was offering you. They auditioned me and they offered me a spot in the first year stream. But Jeff said, I think you'll be really frustrated because you've had 2 years of university and this is really kind of redoing your steps. And I just needed to have my mother not be upset that I wasn't in school. So I was like, nope, I'm good. I'll be here. And again, didn't go much.
But that, when you were living in Western and playing backgammon, is that when you learned how to make the lobster roll?
Or no, later lobster on. Rolls came from, I mean, my first lobster roll was on a trip to Martha's Vineyard. And that was when I was doing Down the Delta, which Maya Angelou was directing. So she had cast me in this. And my friend Samantha Morrison lives in Boston. And she had planned a trip to the vineyard. So we kind of had, I got cast and I was all excited. I was going to shoot this thing. But I had time to go on vacation. So I went to the vineyard. And then I got a call from the casting director saying, you know, they want you at the table read. And you should be here. And I was like, but I'm in Boston. I'm on the Kate. And he was like, yeah, you should be here. So I abandoned my friends. And my mother had come down, abandoned my mother, got in the car and drove home to be back for the table read with Alfre Woodard and Maya Angelou and Esther Roll and Al Freeman Jr. It was a very special time. It was a very special time.
What was it like working with Maya Angelou? Like, that is just epic.
Before we hear about Kim's time spent working with the great Maya Angelou, we're going to go on a short commercial break. More with Finding Your Bliss and Kim Roberts when we come back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by Create, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
Create is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. Create is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, Create is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. Create has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? Create Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about Create Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, everyone. We are back, and this is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio. I'm here with the talented Canadian actress Kim Roberts, and I was just asking you, Kim, about what it was like to work with the brilliant Maya Angelou.
It was wonderful. It was wonderful. I mean, just even being in the room with her from the audition, you know, was, she made us create emotion in that room. Like, everybody was feeling it by the end of it, you know? And I think just being on that project with the wealth of, you know, Wesley Snipes was on that show. Esther Roll became like a second mom to me. She called me Jezebel. But it was an affectionate nickname. I drove her to Niagara Falls in my little Toyota Tercel because she had never seen the falls. But it was just, it became a family bonding experience. Maya loved a party. So we would have, like, there was a party to start the movie. There was a party halfway through the movie. There was a party at the end of the movie. When the film showed at TIFF, she invited all the Canadians who weren't really invited by TIFF to the movie. She invited us to the party. She invited us to the dinner. We ended up watching it with her and being introduced by her on stage. You know, if not for Maya, like, she actually advocated for us as actors when nobody else was. So I had that beautiful experience so early in my career, and I'm always grateful to her for that.
You've worked with so many theatrical luminaries and giants, legends in the industry. Another one is Steven Spielberg. What was your meeting with Steven Spielberg like?
Well, no, I didn't meet him. I worked on The Others, which was a show that he was the executive producer on. So he did produce. I never actually got to meet him personally, but he would have had to cast me in that role. So, you know, I knew that at least he was watching.
That's pretty cool. And Robin Williams.
Robin Williams was beautiful. We worked on Man of the Year together, and we created, Barry Levinson was directing that. And there was, the script was written, and Robin's like, ask me about my tan. Cause he had a little joke he wanted to say. So I said, you know, looks like you, I was playing his makeup artist. So while we're rehearsing, I said, you know, looks like you've got a good tan. And he said, yeah, yeah. I want a little tan, but they sent it to George Hamilton.
Oh,
and, and so then I said, George Hamilton, doesn't he have a grill? And he's like, no, that's George Foreman. So we together wrote that little joke and we're like cracking ourselves up. So we kept it.
Entering with Robin Williams.
I mean, writing comedy with Robin Williams insane. In the Barry Levinson film. Didn't that's get credited insane. For it, but it's that's, okay.
Wow. And Mariah Carey, how did you connect with her?
Oh, she was great. She was, I mean, she's like, you know, just this big superstar, beautiful and glittering everywhere she went. I was in Glitter, but I didn't have scenes with her. But luckily, the director, Vondi Curtisall, made sure to introduce us and make sure that we met. I met her and DeBrad at the rap party, and we got to hang out there a little bit. And she's lovely, very gracious, a lot of fun.
Isn't that incredible? So Schitt's Creek, I have to ask you about that because it is the show that I am obsessed with. I've seen it 400 times. I interviewed Andrew Borenstein, the executive producer, and he was like, really? You saw each episode 6 times? I said, yes. Awesome. Tell me about Schitt's Creek. That must have been a trip just to be in a show that involves Eugene, Dan, Catherine O'Hara, and all the rest.
It really was. It really was. I remember there was a moment while we were actually shooting that I'm looking, that normally you're in the scene, right? You don't come out, but I'm watching Eugene Levy and Chris Elliott do their banter in front of me. You know, they've kind of got off script now and they're kind of creating it. And I'm thinking, this, you're watching comedy genius right here. Like, this is comedy royalty. You're actually in a scene watching them do it. Like, I had an actor moment where I just kind of stepped out of body, which is like, appreciate what you're looking at right now as you interact with them in the scene, because they're so good. They're so good. It just, you know, just flies out of their heads. And so to be able to play with them and to actually, you know, match them, I hope, we had so much fun. Like, Chris Elliott and I had not even met. We'd never met. And the first time we meet is when he walks in and he starts twirling my hair, Marnie. And I'm looking at him like, you know, my eyes are glowing. We're like, totally have this history that we've created in 3 seconds flat. But it was just, they're so beautiful to work with. It was just easy.
What an incredible. You know, what I also really love about you, Kim, and I, throughout my research, I read this, is that you've been a mentor for emerging actors throughout your career. What do you love about mentoring actors and helping the next generation of young artists?
I mean, I guess the best part of it is when they come back and they tell you that you actually had something to do with their trajectory. Because, I mean, I don't think of it in any terms of, you know, somebody asked me for advice, I give them advice. Somebody wants to call me, and, you know, I will give them the time that I have. So, like, people like Trey Anthony, for instance, The Kink in My Hair. We had worked together very, very early on. It might have been actually after she had just written the stage. Well, I worked on the first version of The Kink in My Hair. So I don't know if you know, there was a television show that Global produced. But before that, Vision TV under Joan Jenkinson and Tanya Lee Williams produced The Kink in My Hair. And it was, I think, maybe a 6-part episodic series. And Cheryl Lee Ralph, you know, recent Emmy Award winner for Abbott Elementary, Cheryl Lee Ralph, was the lead. She played Novelette. And I played Novelette's sister, who was trying to take away her business and who's her half-sister, the father, and was contesting. So I was kind of the villain, but we got to work together on that show. And it was great. She was amazing to work with. Cheryl Lee Ralph is a beautiful woman. And I mean, just
remembering this, I remember this because I used to be the managing editor of Toronto Tonight magazine. I don't know if you remember it. It was a performing arts magazine. There were little newsstands of it all over the city. And I covered theater 5 nights a week. And I took celebrities out for celebrity dining dates. And so I knew all of this stuff. So I was right in there at all those shows. And, it's pretty amazing. Well, I have to also ask you what your advice is as a mentor to young actors. My daughter, Lily, is a musical theater actor living in New York. She's a beautiful singer. She's just finishing a master's at NYU. And I hope, I read a story about an actor knocking on your door one day asking you for advice. And I hope that my daughter can knock on your door.
Anytime.
Thank you. Can you tell us about Amelia and how she knocked on your door and you just really gave her advice and a shoulder, paying it forward to a young emerging actor? Like, you helped this woman. She literally knocked on your door. I think she was a complete stranger.
Is this Carlisle that you're talking about?
I think she wrote an article about you.
I read it. Carlisle. That's my friend Carlisle Williams. It's a he.
Okay.
And the whole story with Carlisle is kind of funny because I actually, he was best friends with a neighbor of mine, and I used to date his neighbor, the neighbor's father. And so he kind of, I guess, I don't know if he knew. We were one day at the corner store and he was there. He was working security with, you know, my ex's son, who was his friend. And I guess I walked into the store and it was like 4 o'clock in the morning, like quite a night owl. And it was summertime. And he's like, who's that? And I guess he found out that I was an actor and he was really interested. So he came and knocked on my door because I was still up. And I mean, he's a great friend now. We've become very, very, very close over the years. But yeah, we just ended up talking about the business and what it takes to be an actor and the kind of things you need to do. And he's doing really well now. I'm really proud of him. He's like booking all this stuff.
So, there's something about you, and I'm trying to figure out what it is. It's obviously talent because you're a very talented actor and I've seen you. So I know that to be true. But in addition, I think it's your personality. So you're a very wonderful person to be around. Have people told you that? And do you think that is part of what has led to your success? I know it's hard to talk about yourself in that way, but I really feel that there's something to that.
Oh, Judy, well, thank you. That's very, very kind of you to say. I don't know. I try and treat people the way I'd want to be treated. That's all. You know, you always go through the world. If you can help somebody out, you help them out, you know, and it's always paid forward. I've been blessed. I've got so many good people in my life. So much is love and support. I've got the best friends in the world and family. And so I'm really grateful for that. So I just try and pay.
Let's talk about Paw Patrol, which almost deserves a whole chapter in the book of Kim. And you voice Mayor Goodway in the beloved children's show Paw Patrol. You stepped into the role in the show's seventh season when they recast the voice actor of Mayor Goodway to match the ethnicity of the character on screen. This was done so that the behind-the-scenes diversity of the show could catch up with the on-screen diversity. Brilliant. What was it like stepping into that beloved role, and what has the response been like?
Oh my gosh, I was like scared blankless, man. It was very trepidatious. I mean, it's such an iconic character. And you know, the woman before me, I can never pronounce her name right, but she did such a great job creating this character, right? I wanted to do justice and I didn't want to dramatically change the character. You know, I mean, had I initially created Mayor Goodwin, she might have sounded a little bit more ethnic. urban, but you know, so I needed to try and fuse who I am with who the character was because she's an iconic character. I didn't want to mess with that. And I hope I've managed to, you know, keep her alive in a way that wasn't really too disruptive and that continues.
It's been so great. It's a continuing role as Mayor Goodway, and it's become a film, and it's become another film that just came out in 2023. Like, it's pretty unbelievable. Like, this, that was a really good, that was a good call. That was a good audition from your agent.
Definitely.
That's been pretty amazing.
I love playing Mayor Goodway. She's amazing. She's iconic and she's so much fun to play.
That's so awesome. And also congratulations. Some other big news is we can look out for you as Ms. Patty in Alert Missing Persons Unit, which just aired on the Fox Network, CTV and Hulu on April 2nd. The show was created by John Eisendrath and superstar Jamie Foxx. It's a procedural drama set in the Philadelphia Police Department's Missing Persons Unit. That sounds like it must have been a very fun and great gig to do. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
That was brilliant. As I said, Oz Scott, the director for Color Girls, who had worked with me most recently on Cheetah Girls, which is like 20 years ago. So he was pegged to direct this episode. And it was written by Danielle Mann, who's an executive producer on the show as well. And I guess he thought of me when he read the role. He thought, you know, who do I know up there who could do this? And so they asked us to submit tape and my agent submitted my reel. And they cast me in the role, which was great. So I got to go out to Vancouver in February and the weather was gorgeous. I was swimming outside. The hotel had a rooftop pool. And I'm like, I'm swimming outside in Canada in February. This is insane.
OMG. So great.
It was okay. It's snowing today now in April, but February was great. And then we just shot this thing. I mean, Alert Missing Persons Unit is a beautiful show. I quite enjoy it. I think the leads, Daniel Ramirez, Ryan Broussard, and Scott Kahn, who's James Kahn's son, are phenomenal. Their energy, and Adeola, oh gosh, what's her last name? But Adeola is also brilliant on that. And they just have such a great chemistry together. So I was so happy to be joining them. And Miss Patty is a trip. That character, I would play her all day, every day. Like, she's so much fun. She's so
sassy,
much fun.
Smart, sassy, fun.
All of that. She has everything. She has a love story. She's mean. She's sweet. She's vulnerable. She's threatening dogs, bulldogs. She tells the bulldog her bark is bigger than his. I mean, the sassy has got every level, every note you would want.
Yummy. That's so sweet. Great. That's okay. And I also mentioned earlier that you played, and this is kind of cool, the smart doctor in a Canadian commercial for Benylin cough syrup in the early 90s. And you made history as the first Canadian woman of African descent to be the speaking lead in a national ad campaign. Okay, so how did that all come about? And then if you ever get a cough, do you only drink the Benylin cough medicine as a... What was that?
Well, I don't think I'm contracted to them anymore, so I can tell you I like Buckley's. But back then, Benylin was the thing. No, that was interesting too, because I think, you know, to that point, they hadn't featured a Black woman in a speaking role in a commercial. And Gloria Mann, who is still, you know, still working on the scene, Gloria Mann was the casting director back then. Oh. And I had worked, as I told you, I started working in theater with the Company of Sirens. And I worked with them for 3 years, never got an agent. I was really only doing theater. And there was a point in time when, you know, equity was a real hot topic and there was not enough diversity on television. And I don't know if you remember Sarah Botsford in the show ENG.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Art Hindle, Sarah Botsford. So, yeah. And Sarah was like, she's really a great advocate. And she said to the producers, we need more diversity on the show. And the producers were kind of relaxed and like, well, there's nobody out there. So Sarah took her own money, rented an audition suite and had her and her assistant. They went through this book that Sandy Ross, an actor, had published called Into the Mainstream. Brenda Camino was a part of that as well. And Into the Mainstream listed all the actors of color, of diversity, with accents, with disabilities, LGBT, like all the categories, right, were in this book. And it had our names, our contacts, and what we could do. And she had her assistant go through and contact everybody in the book and say, we'd like you to come in and put yourself on tape for Sarah Botsford this weekend. And she had the studio for a weekend. She had audition sides. So it was like the little clips of a scene that you will read from. And we all kind of showed up, not really knowing what this was. And she literally was cataloging all the people in the city that the producers could use, her own campaign. And so she put us on tape. And so I went into the room and there's the camera and there's Sarah and there's a reader, like any audition. And she said, okay, please slate. And I said, what's that? And she said, oh, you give us your name and your agent. And I said, well, I don't have an agent. She said, okay, well, just tell us your phone number. So I did. They wrote it down. And then I did the audition with her. And at the end of it, she said, you don't have an agent? And I said, no. And she wrote down something on a piece of paper. She said, call this number at 4:00. And I called the number and it was Joan Lambert. And that was her agent at the time. And she told Joan Lambert to take me on as a client.
Oh,
I got my first agent.
The best story. Like that's unheard of. Like in today's day and age.
Unheard of.
That's and so like Lana Turner at Schwab's getting recognized.
Okay, like totally. Totally. Wow. Lambert's now a producer, but at the time she put me in for that Benylin commercial as an audition, and Gloria Mann saw me, and Gloria Mann told me later that she had to fight. She had to advocate for me because as much as they liked me, they did not want to cast a Black woman in that role. Gloria fought, she fought, she fought, she fought. They cast me and then we made history.
And the rest is history. Isn't that awesome? That's a great, great story. Wow. Thank you for sharing that. So another huge thing, and I will admit I got the, you know, the goosies, as J-Lo would say when I read this, is one of the most exciting things is that you're going to be performing at the Stratford Festival in a brand new Canadian play called Get That Hope by the award-winning playwright Andrea Scott. Mm-hmm. And this is so beyond exciting. So first of all, congratulations. Wow. Can you tell us a little bit about the play, your character, and what the audience can expect? And I know you haven't started rehearsing, so we probably don't even know what it all is yet, but what you can say thus far.
Don't answer that just yet. We're going to go on a short commercial break. More with Kim Roberts and Finding Your Bliss when we come back. Back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by Create, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
Create is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. Create is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, Create is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. Create has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? Create Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about Create Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, everyone. We're back, and this is Finding Your Bliss. And I've been having a wonderful conversation with award-winning actress Kim Roberts. And just before the break, I was asking you, Kim, about your upcoming debut at the Stratford Festival in the play Get That Hope. Can you tell us more about what audiences can expect?
Absolutely. Well, Andrew Scott worked with the new playwrights division at Stratford under Keith Barker, I think it is. And they've got this beautiful, beautiful piece of theater that they've created. I think it's a future classic. And when I read it, I felt that way about it, you know, and one of the main females is Margaret White. Richard White is her husband and the lead character of the show. And yeah, Margaret is just a really interesting character. There's so many levels to her. There are so many things you want to know about her. And there's so much that she has to share and add to the story. And so in reading it, I quite fell in love with her. And Andre Sills is the director of the piece. And we'd worked together on Intimate Apparel, which is at Theatre Calgary many years ago. That's another show that Obsidian Theatre introduced to the Canadian audiences years ago. But yeah, so I was in Intimate Apparel with Andre. And so he wanted me for this role. So they requested a tape and eventually got something to them. And yeah, I was really grateful that they wanted to see me. So after all these years, I'm finally going to Stratford. You know, we created Obsidian Theater because Stratford wasn't inviting us. You know, I wasn't even being seen by Stratford. And so to be invited to do a piece at Stratford all these years later is very, very exciting to join the company on this ground.
Talk about a full circle moment and just what are you the most excited about being at the Stratford Fest, just being in that environment?
Just being in the environment. I mean, we did a workshop, so I've kind of had a taste of it. And the play is wonderful. The other actors are brilliant. Celia Loma, Jennifer Villaverde, Conrad Coates, who everybody adores. He plays Richard, my husband. And yeah, so workshopping the play, we really got into it. The piece is so beautiful. It's, you know, it's a family. It's set on one day and it's a very hot day and it's Independence Day celebration. But all of these things start to come out, all these secrets, all of these stories, you know, and how do we navigate through it? And I think it's a really great ride for the audience.
So excited to be there and see that piece. That's great.
Just being in that creative milieu where everybody in that building is doing something that is their craft, that they're passionate about, and that their lives are dedicated to. It's a beautiful, rarefied air. It's a really nice place to be.
So wonderful. Did you have to audition, or had they sort of decide on you? And if so, when you found out you got that part, how did you hear about it?
It was a crazy kind of thing. Like, I've had a lot going on. And so I actually didn't have time to really audition for it. You know, they asked me to, and I just couldn't submit a tape. I just didn't have a chance. So I sent regrets. We said, I'm so sorry, but Kim's going to have to pass on this. We just don't have time. And the director reached out to me and he said, can you please just get us something? Just send us something. He's like, I know you, I want you, but nobody else does. I have to be able to show them who you are so that they might consider you. And so I did. I got something to him, and then I guess my agents got the call. So,
oh, that's just fabulous. So I didn't realize this. Not only you're an actor and a co-founder of a renowned theater company, Obsidian, but you've also been very active on the local scene. You were the host at Harbourfront's main stage for 12 years. And I have so many fond memories of attending theater there and even being part of theater there. But you don't want to know about that. It was the International Milk Festival.
Yeah. Oh,
walking through the jungle of a very, I don't know. It was some crazy theater piece. What did you love about that gig? And what are some of your fondest memories of doing that?
That was a great, phenomenal gig. I mean, I was there for 12 years, so it became like family. You know, the crew, if I ever go down to see a show, I make sure I pop backstage or into the sound booth to say hi. I got to introduce some prime talent, like Femi Kuti's son, Fela Kuti, or am I getting one or the other, Fela or Femi, the son. And I got to introduce Cassandra Wilson, who is a jazz artist I really, really love. And there's a funny story around that, actually, because she was performing at Harbourfront one year, and I had a gig where I actually had to go shoot in Washington in the CIA. I had to be vetted by the CIA to shoot. It was called The Agency, but I think they changed the name. And it was a spy movie. And so I actually met George Tenet, who was the director of the CIA at that time. And yes, we were hanging out. But in order to do it, I had to give up that weekend at Harbourfront where I was going to be introducing Cassandra Wilson. And my friend Melanie Nichols King, who had had the job prior to me, was going to be in town. So I asked her if she could fill in for me. So she did. And she ended up hanging out with the band and actually later married the drummer and had a son. I mean, they're divorced now. She's remarried and they're very happy. But at the time, like, she had this whole life that came from that one night. And I was so mad that I wasn't going to meet, like, Cassandra Wilson by door. But then boarding the plane to Washington, who's walking off the plane but Cassandra and her then partner, Isaac DeBangole, who was a brilliant actor in his own right. I was like totally starstruck by and in love with myself. And they walk up and I was like, hi. And she was like, hi. We didn't know each other. And I said, I'm supposed to be introducing you tonight. And she said, where are you going? I said, good hands. My friend Melanie's got you. I got to go to Washington. And we had this beautiful interaction. So, you know, it wasn't lost. And years later, she came back and I did get to hang out with her and introduce her. So,
isn't that wonderful? Well, you've been so involved in Canada and in Toronto and in culture here and in so many wonderful things. It's really incredible. And I want to ask you what you have coming up right now that you're the most excited about, but what are you looking the most forward to in the next couple of months?
I'm really looking forward to Stratford and Paw Patrol. I mean, I love continuing my role as Mayor Goodway. Every time I'm in the studio, I have so much fun with them. But yes, Stratford is going to be a big adventure for me. You know, I'm going to be living out there surrounded by the Bard's works and words, and I'll get to see all the other performances as well as be involved in our own. And, you know, I'm really looking, and I, you know, everybody's really excited about coming out to see the show. So I feel like this will be a really, really sweet time.
This is a big thing in your career. Very, very exciting. Can you talk to us about what it means for you to be an artist in this country? I remember years ago, I used to do this series on let's showcase Canada's performing artists so they don't have to be forced to go south of the border in order to be validated. But you've kind of stayed here. I know you've worked in the US and you certainly have met lots of Americans and international people. But what would you like to impart to people about what it means to be an artist in this country?
That's a whole other show.
A whole other show. I know I have a lot to say about that too.
Oh boy, so many things. I mean, I am grateful because I've been able to forge a career. So everything I've gotten to do has been from, you know, the work that has come to this country. So absolutely always at the heart of it, grateful that I've been able to be an artist. But that said, the life of an artist in this country is not an easy one at all. We are not remunerated properly at all. I mean, I guess that's part of the selling feature. You know, we sell ourselves to Americans and other worldwide productions as being cheap. Come here, pay us the very bare minimum because we are, you know, we're known as scale city, Toronto is, right? So there's an actor scale, which is basically the minimum anybody can be paid. So if you come out of theater school, get your first job, you got to be paid this amount. Well, yeah. 30 years in, guess how much they're still wanting to pay us? It's still the same amount, right? And it's really difficult and challenging to negotiate. Now, after a certain period of time, like I've got a great agent who negotiates the heck out of everything, and I'm so grateful for him, you know, David Ritchie at Ambition Talent, shout him out. But, you know, he works hard. He works hard to really get what he feels his artists are worth. Until I was with him, which has only been maybe the last 6 years of my career, I didn't even know that I could be paid a little bit better than I was being paid, you know? So for the majority of my career, it was scale. And you'd feel like something if you got scale and a half or double scale. Wow. But that's still not a lot of money. And, you know, an actor only works how many days out of a year? We spend a lot of time auditioning and rehearsing and doing a lot of things for free.
Training,
putting your wardrobe, your makeup, all of that stuff, the time it takes for, you know, and you're not remunerated for any of it. So that when you do work one or two or three or four days on set, you've got to make that money sustain your life, right? People don't really get that. So I'm so grateful to Taraji P. Henson, for instance, for talking out. I mean, I know she's talking about millions and people don't really empathize with that. But what she's saying is at her level, she should be remunerated as other people are being. And she's so right. And for us here in Canada, you know, it's ridiculous. It's like you can't make a living. It's not right.
So, you know, something funny, years ago, I had a gig called the Celebrity Dining Date where I would take out a celebrity for dinner and I would have to review the restaurant and talk about the celebrity. And I didn't care about the restaurant because I was so much more interested in the celebrity. So I would just talk a little bit about the food and all about the celebrity. And I remember Tabby Tabora Johnson saying, you have to be a session singer. You have to be on a kids show. You have to be an actor. You have to do a one woman show. You have to do commercials. In order to make $40,000 as a Canadian superstar, right?
I remember you said, say the number again. People don't believe you,
but $40,000. That's what she wants.
That's Tabby Johnson, who was a star, right? Yeah. Like for me, for most of my career, I've told people like my worst year was $17,000. My best year it was maybe 80 something thousand, and I work all the time.
And look at you, you're like you're next level, like you're what people want to aspire to become. So yeah, there's something wrong with the Canadian thing, but we're happy that you're staying in this country and we're happy that you're here. Not to say that if you don't get a great gig in the US, we won't support that. Of course we will. Can you tell us just what your best advice is? And I always say not only to young actors, but to listeners on this program who might be older and want to reinvent themselves or want to really pursue acting. I know of actors who've started at 50 and 60 and so on. But just people who want to enter the industry, or people who are listening right now of an older age who might want to reinvent themselves and do some acting. What's your best advice to those people about how to get into this industry?
Go for it. Just, you know, you have to do it. So you have to find out where people are putting, if it's student films, if it's, you know, it's hard for me to give advice for getting in because it's been a long time since I was getting in. So I don't know what's out there anymore, but there are resources. There are acting classes, there are billboards. I'm sure a lot of it's online now, but you find out where actors are congregating, where they're doing scene study together. So you can have classes for free with each other. You know, we used to do things where we'd get together and we'd bring in audition scenes and we'd audition with our friends and we'd critique each other. So you could grow that way because classes are expensive. You can't always afford to be doing classes all the time. So, you know, and if you can work for free in the beginning, do that. Get on set, get do background, learn what the world of film is like. There's so many, it's a world of its own. So there's so many protocols. There's so many things to understand about being on a set, you know, how to comport yourself on a set. So all of these things are things to learn. Just get, you know, immerse yourself in whatever you can. And, you know, eventually, you know, hopefully you'll be able to get an agent. And that's how you start getting credits that can get you into the unions. And then you can get better jobs and you build from there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Remember when they used to have that Theatre Ontario board? It's all yes. Online now. Remember that?
Yes. Well, that for me was like, you'd go and look at the Theatre Ontario board and you'd see what gigs were available, you know?
Absolutely. Totally. There was this wonderful, your outfits and your gowns that you wear to the red carpets and the galas are outstanding. And I really noticed them. And there was one in particular that was a black dress with a stunning red cape that just was flowing. And you just looked so stunning and so gorgeous in that outfit. Can you tell us more about it?
I would love to tell you more about it because the designer of that dress is Deidre Hackman with My Frocks Box out of Calgary. And oh my gosh, how much do I love My Frocks Box? It's MYFROX box. And I met her through Adam Quang and the Style Lounge. My publicist, Sasha Stoltz, hooked us up for a TIFF this last year. And Deidre and I met, and she had these two gorgeous, she had three gowns for me, actually. And we couldn't decide. So she's like, wear them all, just wear them all. and so one of them was the black with the magenta cape. And I just felt so beautiful.
Magnificent.
Stunning. Oh. I wore that to Fashion Magazine's party. And then I had another beautiful silver dress with a champagne cape that I wore to Canif. And, you know, we love each other so much. And I love her work and she loves how I make her clothes look. And so we've become partners and I am now an ambassador for My Frocks Box. So I've been wearing her clothes to red carpets and you will see some beautiful things coming. I just did a photo shoot where I'll be showing another one of her dresses. So keep watching and make
That's
sure you
check. So awesome. There's a question we ask everyone at the end of the show. And naturally, we're going to ask you this question. Yes. Most important question of the hour. What is bliss for Kim Roberts?
Bliss is a beach for me. I'm quite happy to be on a sunset beach somewhere, you know. I really do love the water. But when I can't be on a beach, I really just have to recreate peace, time, space. You know, I like my own company, so I have no problem just kind of pushing everything out and just spending time on my own. But I think it's important to come back to your center and to just give yourself time to think, to daydream, to zone out, you know, and to hopefully hear the waves crashing as you do it.
You never told us when the lobster roll became a thing and how you became a master chef of the lobster roll.
Story, you're right. Okay. So I was in Cape Cod when I had my first lobster roll and fell in love with them. And then fast forward years later, I mean, I used to make them on my own, but I think I kind of perfected the lobster roll after shooting The Sinner in Lunenburg. There was a scene where I'm sitting with Bill and with Jessica Hedge and we are eating lobster rolls. And I loved that scene because I had to keep eating lobster rolls. And they had the making real lobster rolls fresh in the kitchen as we went. So I was just like, yeah, I kept messing up. So we'd have to redo it. but at the end of it, the chef kind of gave me the extra. She's like, look, we've got all this extra lobster meat and we got the buns and we got, so she gave me the components and I saw how it was put together and I started making my own version from then on. And, you know, I'm all right.
What is the best way for people to contact you, connect with you on social media, and follow your amazing career?
Thank you. I'm on most of the platforms. On Instagram, I'm Ms. Kim Roberts, so MS Kim Roberts. It's also the same for Threads. On Facebook, I have a page, so it's Kim Roberts Page. I'm on LinkedIn as Kim Roberts, and I'm on Twitter as Kim Roberts One.
Awesome. Well, we're going to be watching for you and for all these wonderful things that you're doing. We're going to mention them at the end of the show again, and break a leg at Stratford. Well, I definitely want to come and see you in that. And much continued success. And it's really been delightful. This was supposed to be 30 minutes. I don't know if you saw in the middle of the interview, I put up a card saying, can we please extend this to the full show? Because you're just so delightful. And it was truly an honor to have you here today.
Oh, Judy, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. It's truly been a pleasure to talk with you. You're so knowledgeable and your questions are great.
Thank you.
Each week, we spotlight a fabulous person like Kim Roberts who is living their bliss. So if you're an author, artist, yoga, meditation, or mindfulness expert, or really anyone who has found and is following their bliss, we would love to hear from you. We also love to feature singers, songwriters, or musicians on the show. If you're a singer, please reach out to us. Also, what did you love about today's program? Are there any guests or topics you would like us to feature on Finding Your Bliss? Write to us at fyb@findingyourbliss.com. For those of you who don't know, I'm also the Bliss Coach. That means that I help you get unstuck, gain clarity, and find your passion and purpose. Reach out to me at findingyourbliss.com/coaching. I'm also on Insight Timer, the number one free meditation app, and all you have to do is search up Judy Liebrach. And of course, you can always follow us at the Bliss Minute on Instagram and Facebook. And for anyone who'd like to see Kim's fabulous black dress with the magenta cape that we talked about in today's episode, I've posted a beautiful photo of Kim wearing it on my Instagram page at the Bliss Minute. I encourage you all to check it out. I would like to thank our wonderful guest, Kim Roberts, for being on the show today. Also, thank you to Mag Ruffman, Siobhan Kiley, producer Olivia Weatherall, audio engineer Juliana Yannicello, senior editor Lauren Kaminsky, video editor Sierra Brown Rodriguez, audio producer Faz Kazi, and everyone here at Zoomer. And of course, a big thank you to our sponsor, the Create Fertility Center. This has been a very inspirational show today because Kim Roberts is a very inspirational person and another incredibly inspirational, elevated, kind, ethical, loving, and wonderful person was my late father, Herbert Siblin, who loved classical music. And one of his favorites was listening to Mozart, which I would often do with him. His birthday is on April 25th, so I wanted to close out the show today with one of his favorite pieces, Ein Klein Nachtmusik by Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. Dad, this one's for you. Love you forever. Thank you. everyone here, I'm Judy Liebrack, reminding you all to take one step closer to finding your bliss.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.